we don't move on this now, someone else will.
Doesn't anyone here have those figures?
They're in the New York office. But I can get them for you.
Belinda suddenly discovered how useful it could be to access everything on her desktop computer, even when she was 2,000 miles from her desk.
Got them.
PowerBook from Apple.
Hello, and welcome to GoldCast, the best 30-plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long, Lewis. I'm your host, Airfront Elijah. Join me today, he's the gov you can't help but love. Leander Cady is here.
Hey.
Who's ruining the show already?
Tracy. She just...
Oh, jeez.
Every time, like, she doesn't call me all week until I do a podcast, and then the minute it starts, she's on and blowing.
Also with us, he likes to cliff dive for adventure and dumpster dive for dinner. Buster Honey is here.
That's pretty mean.
Those don't get old. Also with us, we're going to be walkie-talking the heck out of our Apple Watch Series 4s once he gifts me one for Christmas. Lewis Walls is here.
Over and out, over and out.
My very close, dear friend, Lewis Wallace.
It's going to be great. Once you get that thing strapped in your wrist, we're going to be talking, back and forth, walkie-talk. We're going to walk and talk and walkie-talkie.
We're going to have such a great time. I think that I am going to go with the space gray, Lewis, just to let you know that.
Yeah, okay.
Are you getting ready for Christmas? Are you getting all your gifts in a row?
Yeah. I have a Series 0 space gray. Maybe I could just paint a little thin red line on the digital crown. Toss a little dirt in there to make it feel haptic.
That's not compatible with walkie-talkie mode.
Oh, that's right.
How are two best buds supposed to walkie-talkie when only one of them has the newest Apple Watch, Lewis?
My plan is foiled!
You need to reconsider your gift-giving. All right, here we go. Here's what we have for you guys this week. Another week, another gate. We'll be talking to you about ChargeGate, the gate that ended before it even began, and in a new internet, or in a new interview, I should say, Tim Cook revealed just why Apple banned Alex Jones. But unfortunately, he still couldn't explain why Siri still sucks. I've also got another epic MoviePass update for all of you. And this is one of the weirdest ones yet. Leander just can't wait for me to go on and on and on and on about MoviePass. So we'll be making that segment at least 40 to 45 minutes just for him. And we're going to wrap up with an all new under review where we tell you about what we like and what we don't about the gadgets that we're currently testing out. I don't remember the last time we did this segment. In fact, I don't remember the last time we did any end segments because we've just had so much news with all the new phones and everything. And now that things are getting back to normal, we can start working in some more juicy tidbits here at the end. Let's see here. Before we dive into all the fun, oh my goodness, how could I forget? Let me say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Do you need a website? Maybe you are looking for work. You want to promote yourself, your photography, your programming abilities. Maybe you're a designer. You want to showcase your artwork or something online. Maybe you're a business. You want people to find your website online. You want it to look beautiful. You want them to learn about your business and come throw their money at you. You need a website. Maybe you are Buster Heine. You're traveling the world in a van and you want people to see what van life is all about. You want to take them into the dumpster with you to find a juicy snack to eat later. You can promote all those things on your brand new Squarespace website at squarespace.com/cultcast. You can get started with a 2-week free trial. Here's how it works. You select from one of their beautifully designed templates. You can customize it if you want, make it look uniquely yours, or you can just click a button and you will have a website up and running in no time at all. The entire thing is optimized for an iPhone, for mobile devices, for your MacBook Pro, for PCs, whatever device visits your website. Squarespace does all the auto arranging in the background to make your website look great. And they have wonderful 24/7 customer service. So if you get stuck, there is always someone there to help you out. Squarespace.com/cultcast. Start the 2-week free trial. Build a website. See how you like it. And if you want to continue your service after the trial, use code cultcast at checkout. You'll save 10% off your first order. Plus, if you order a year of service, you get an additional discount and a free domain name, squarespace.com/cultcast, and use code cultcast at checkout. Leander, Do you want to talk about the Chinese server story?
Yeah.
Oh, before I have you do that, I almost forgot. I have to mention one other thing. We need to talk about the cult club. Whoo, baby. Have we been having a good time in the cult club? Have you ever wanted to have a place where you could hang out with your friends, those people that are interested in Apple stuff, people who are interested in technology, people who are interested in gaming, people who are interested in the topics that you're interested in? We had hundreds of people join the cult club last week after I mentioned it on the show. We had to close the gates, and it was getting way too packed. The 40-man jacuzzi has been packed all week. You can barely squeeze in, even if you don't wear your banana hammock. We have a walk-in Stella Artois fridge, and it's packed. It's just been re-outfitted with more shelves. We have more spaces for bottles now, so we're not going to run out. And I want to invite you to join the club. We're going to reopen membership, welcome you into the gates, but we're only going to keep the invitation open for a limited time like we did last week. We don't want it to get too crowded too fast, so we're doing this in installments. I'm going to include a link in the show notes. So if you missed out last week, you have another opportunity to join. Come in, say hi, get to know your fellow CultCast listeners. It's great. I pop into the room several times a day. People are having discussions, and we're talking about all the cool stuff that interests us in the world of Apple and technology. So I want to invite you in one more time. It's going to be a limited time deal, just like last time. Once we get the room too full, the governor's lounge, once it's hustling and bustling, we're going to close the gates yet again. And so you want to take advantage of this quickly. We're going to keep it open for about 24 hours. Link in the show notes. Leander, let's talk about this Chinese server story. First of all, why is it interesting?
Well, you know, it's potentially a big, big deal, especially in the context, you know, of what's going on politically at the moment with Trump and the tariffs. And, you know, one of the big complaints about the Chinese is that they're stealing American intellectual property. But anyway, to back up, the story is that, you know, apparently the Chinese People's Liberation Army was able to infiltrate a server supplier in China and put these little tiny spy chips actually onto the motherboards of these servers that were sold to a bunch of U.S. companies, including Apple and Amazon and some government ones as well and a bunch of others. You know, Bloomberg is claiming that this little tiny chip is able to spy on what the servers are doing, and they're interested in gaining, you know, intellectual property, but also, you know, confidential product plans. They're not really interested in consumers' data. They want to get, it's like, you know, corporate espionage. They want to spy on these companies, you know, and steal their corporate secrets. And, you know, this is like a big, long story in Bloomberg Business Week. Two reporters, they say it's a year's worth of reporting. They interviewed more than 100 people. They got statements for everyone left, right, and center. They've got 17 sources, all of whom are unnamed, including three inside Apple. So, you know, it seems like a serious effort, but Apple and Amazon both released really detailed and very, very strong rebuttals to the story. You know, detailing, saying, you know, this is wrong, that's wrong, we never did this, we never did that. They said they'd actually been working with Bloomberg behind the scenes. You know, Bloomberg had been putting in, had asked them a bunch of questions, and they'd already denied this stuff. And yet, you know, and that was included in the report. But, you know, I've never seen rebuttals like this from, you know, companies, from Apple anyway, you know, like that's so detailed and so, you know, so it's such a robust denial of every fact in the story. They said that, you know, that they got everything wrong. And Amazon said exactly the same thing, too, that they have never found these chips. They're not working with the FBI. You know, there's no problem here. So it's a really weird situation, you know. And I just talked to someone who used to work for Apple, Anna Katrina Shadlesky. She was one of the product design engineers for the iPhone, or for the iPod, the iPhone, and then the Apple Watch. And she spends a ton of time in China, you know, doing the production stuff. She's part of Tim Cook's operations team. And she said that even though she didn't have specific knowledge about this particular case, it was entirely plausible. And she said it happens all the time that, you know, that it, not necessarily for spying, but, you know, the vendor in China, sometimes they'll substitute chips for cheaper chips and, you know, skim off the difference. Sometimes they do it accidentally. You know, they're buying chips on the sort of open market, and they'll get the wrong chip. She said that she sees it really, really frequently. That when you have a contract manufacturer, this you know, like, often you don't get what you're paying for. You're getting something different. And she said it happens. You know, like sometimes she said just recently, one of the startups companies that her company is working with, you know, they didn't know this until the batteries started smoking in their devices, and they went back and checked out, and there were some dodgy chips on there. So I don't know. Yeah, very weird story and a big deal, I think, because I think this is the first time that, you know, that this has been, this kind of espionage has been attempted at the base hardware level. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's definitely been instances where software, even malicious firmware, has been installed onto devices. You know, there's a big controversy about Huawei and, you know, how it's sending data back to China on what Android users are doing, you know, what its users are doing. And there's been all sorts of dodgy apps, haven't there, that phone home. You know, Apple's banned a bunch from the App Store for apps that, you know, that reach outside their sandbox and send back, you know, potentially sensitive data about you. But, you know, at this level, at the hardware level, I think this is the first time we've heard of this.
I've heard stories like this in the past about Chinese corporations installing hardware into mainframes into servers and using that hardware to spy and collect corporate secrets and military secrets. And I've also heard stories about how companies, American companies building stuff in China, have had their designs ripped off, their intellectual property ripped off. And there's all these arcane rules about how they have to partner with these Chinese companies to have products manufactured, and those Chinese companies are either owned or controlled by the Chinese government, and they're used as vehicles to steal intellectual property. I mean, you hear stories. We've heard stories like this for years.
Well, yeah.
And so, just on that face alone, I wouldn't be surprised if this was actually happening.
Yeah, it's kind of odd, you know. I mean, if you look at Apple, look at the iPhone. I mean, the iPhone is a juggernaut, and look how beautifully it's made, and look at all the insane technology. And that, you know, obviously was all developed with a whole bunch of Chinese suppliers, you know, namely Foxconn. And from what I understand, you know, I mean, Apple, you know, says it's designed by Apple in California and made in China. But I think, you know, that sort of downplays the Chinese input on this. You know, I think they were developed, you know, it was developed, you know, with the Chinese. It was co-developed. And of course, you know, they wouldn't be as successful as they are if they can't be made in huge numbers. And that is a big part of the story. Like, you know, their manufacturability, which is what which is, I presume, the expertise that a company like Foxconn brings to it. But, you know, so I think it's unfair to say the Chinese are stealing, you know, US IP. It seems to me that it's a partnership and there's, you know, IP going in both directions. And for a company like Apple, I mean, you know, I think it's been super, super successful. So I was a little bit skeptical about that.
I wonder how Apple protects their intellectual property when they're giving schematics to these companies, these manufacturing companies in China, and are hoping that their product is going to be assembled, but the company is not going to take that technology and leak it to another company or build a competing product. And you see some of these Apple clones out there, and they look so similar. Who knows what the internals, if the internals are similar to like an iPhone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or not,
well, they clearly do that all the time, I think. You know, that they create a new method for doing something, and then it gets applied across the board to all the different companies.
You mean Foxconn does
that? Yeah, you know, Foxconn, I think, you know, because they assemble almost everyone's phones and everyone's computers, and you can see, you know, that's bleeding over the techniques, you know, that making thinner and lighter, the materials they're using. That's definitely, you know, applied across the board. But
well, I'm glad that this seems to only apply to corporate data, because when I was originally reading this story, I was like, I took some very sensitive videos of myself in my iCloud photo library of me dancing in very precarious situations in some very small bathing suits I had recently acquired. And I was worried. I was very worried for a moment. And I was like, oh, yeah. Did the Chinese get those? Are those going to end up on Weibo? Yeah. But I've been scanning Weibo all day and they're not there. So that's a good sign so far. But we got to keep our fingers on this story and see how this develops. Leander, I need you to follow this.
Oh, I'm all over it.
I need you to tell me how this develops. Okay. And we'll see how this how this develops, because Apple and Amazon have both vehemently denied that this is actually an issue, which I didn't even want to talk about this story this week, but Leander convinced me to do it because I thought it was a non-story. I'm like, well, Apple and Amazon have said this is total BS and this is not an issue at all. So I was like, why are we even talking about this?
They kind of have to say it's BS, though, don't they? Because could you imagine Apple coming out and saying, oh, yeah.
They got us, guys. They got me, yo.
You know, like the public reaction to that would probably be hysterical.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. Even if they have a problem with a product, like if your iPhone is bending, they don't even admit to that.
Yeah.
They just sweep into the carpet.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can do sort of like a non-denial. You know, they could have said, you know, we found it. But you know, the funny thing is that there is one sort of small corroborating piece of evidence, which is that last year, Apple cut ties with that server company for something that sounds very similar, you know, for a security breach. And this was reported by The Information and Ars Technica and a bunch of others, including us. So they did cut their relationship with this company a year ago. And that was you know, fairly widely reported.
Mm.
I don't know if they put an official statement at the time, but... Mm. Yeah, it's really odd. It's very, very odd.
Well, this story is just developing, right? It didn't just come out today?
Yeah.
So we're still following it. Okay, let's talk about ChargeGate.
Oh.
Right on the heels of last week's show, I was relaxing in the governor's lounge in my silk robe and my fez, and I heard the members talking about ChargeGate, and some of them sent me links to different stories, and I saw Lewis Helsentager's video on ChargeGate, and I said, oh no, another gate already, two gates on one iPhone, how could it be? So it turns out, well, let me start from the top. I'll tell you what ChargeGate is, because some of you may not have heard about it. It is an issue that some people are having with their iPhone XS, XS Max, and iOS 12, where if they plug in their phone while the screen is off, while the phone is asleep, it doesn't begin charging. And Lewis Helsentager came out with a video that said the iPhone XS has a serious problem.
I thought he was making hype videos for that video.
He was?
Yeah, they were pretty...
He was hoping for his next Bengate.
Right.
You could just... Yeah. He was ready to put down a down payment on a new Tesla Model X. Right. He's getting ready for those clicks.
Exactly.
Yeah, man, that guy knows how to draw a crowd to a video. I have to give him
Dude,
that.
How many views has he got on this latest one?
The last I saw was like 5 million, which is pretty good for him. I'd say his videos normally get like between 1.5 and maybe 2 million for a popular one. So 5 is pretty good. But, you know, it was hot off the heels of BeautyGate, and he already did a BeautyGate video and then immediately followed up with the ChargeGate. And it's like, you know, there's only so many gates some people can handle in 1 week. Eventually, yeah, they start to lose interest, you know?
He sent me that video on Saturday, and I tried to, like, duplicate what he did, and I couldn't. So I just kind of dismissed it.
Lewis sent you the video on Saturday?
Yeah.
Lewis Helsentager?
Yeah, it was Saturday or Sunday, over the weekend.
Oh, really? He reached out to you and said, hey, do you want to cover this?
Yeah, totally.
You're kidding.
No.
I didn't know that he did such things. I thought he just released the video and just let whoever wanted to cover it, cover
it. He's getting much more savvy.
Yeah. He's trying to get it hyped, huh? Yeah, interesting. So when I heard about this issue, I thought, okay, this doesn't qualify as a gate. We need to get our definitions in order. Gates have to be hardware issues. They can't be software issues, because as soon as I heard about this one, I said to myself, they're going to fix this with a software update, and it's going to be over before you know it. Well, sure enough, Apple has just released iOS 12.1 Beta 2, and it solves the problem.
Well,
so there you go. It's like it turned out to be like a week long.
Wouldn't BeautyGate then also be a non-gate if it's not hardware? Because that's a software thing as well.
Well, I'm not sure if that's a software or hardware thing. And I'm not even sure it's a thing, period. I mean, that's like people saying my Lamborghini makes me too attractive to the opposite sex. It's like, oh, sorry. I'm sorry, our car makes you look too cool. But we don't want to retread that ground. We talked about that last week. But I feel like a gate needs to be a design flaw in the hardware that cannot be fixed. Like the iPhone 6 bend stuff, that was a legitimate gate. That's the apex of gates, because it's a serious problem that many people are experiencing, and Apple cannot fix it unless they give you a brand new device. And so it ends up being, you know, a big issue for many people. But if they can just fix it with software. So they did. And if you're having this problem, first of all, you said you couldn't replicate this, right, Buster? It seems like many people are not having this issue.
Yeah, it was, you know, like with my iPhone XS Max, it's like a little bit slow to like start charging. Like I'll plug it in and it won't charge for like a few seconds, but then it pops up and it starts charging. So
wait a second. Wait. You got the tennis match?
Yeah, you didn't. I posted that in the Governor's Lounge. No, it was in the Governor's Lounge.
You posted it in the Governor's Lounge and I missed it?
Yeah.
I was probably in the 40-man jacuzzi with industrial jets. Holy moly. How do you like it?
Well, it's beautiful. It's great. Everything that Leander and Lewis said it is.
You're going to make me get one, aren't you?
Damn, dude. It's the most beautiful iPhone I've ever had in my life.
Really? You love it that much?
That much.
Is it worth $1,100?
I don't know, because Lewis convinced me that, if you're just paying $50 a month, you don't feel
pinch. that's exactly the whole point, isn't it? It's only 30 or 40 bucks a month.
Right.
You're going to be upgrading, though, in a year. You know you are.
Well, see, the nice thing is I have, like, 3 family members on my AT&T account, and none of them ever upgrade. I'm the only one that upgrades. So I upgraded and gave my mom my iPhone 10 because she's like was on a 6S and wanted to upgrade to an 8.
Oh, what a nice son.
And I was like, I can't let you have an 8. That's horrible.
Yeah.
That's a good phone.
Yeah, it's a great phone. What are you talking about?
It's
I know people that have like the iPhone 5. I saw a guy the other day at the zoo. He was using an iPhone 4 and I stopped in my tracks and I said, dude, is that an iPhone 4? And he's like, yeah, man, it's still going strong. And the earpiece doesn't work, and the speaker stopped working, and you know, it doesn't always get reception.
It shuts down, the screen's cracked.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's great.
It restarts randomly all throughout the day, but yeah, man, it's still going great. And I was like, dude, you need a new phone, my brother.
We found a couple of people who were using the original iPhone.
How is that even possible?
Because there was a couple of guys. Dave had to look long and hard, but he found a couple of guys that were still using the original iPhone. One guy was a photographer. One guy was just using it because he just had never upgraded. And I think, but he lived in a weird place because I think it's actually incompatible with some modern networks.
Yeah,
he just had never gotten around to upgrading from the original iPhone.
Yeah.
I just haven't had time. So busy, I haven't had time.
Yeah,
it was. I can't remember the details. I'll have to look it up. I can't remember the details now, but. Another guy had an iPhone, and there was something wrong with the camera, and it produced these really crazy pictures. So he carried around just to take pictures with it.
Oh, yeah. Huh. I remember that.
Did he have another phone that he uses an actual phone? Why would you do that to yourself? Just upgrade. Just upgrade.
It was art,
man. I think I'm going to have to get that. What's that?
It was for art.
What, do you like the camera so much?
Yeah, they made these really crazy, glitchy pictures.
Oh, okay. Well, that still seems superfluous, but, you know.
Well, more power to that guy.
He's an artist. What can you say? I resisted. I was going to go into the Apple store and get the Max. I was going to do it twice, and I've resisted both times. But now my store, local store, has them in stock pretty much all the time. You can just walk in and pick one up. But, you know, the only thing that has stopped me is I don't really have a case that I love that I've seen out there for the phone yet. The case that I love that I use now is the Rhino Shield Crash Guard. They haven't started releasing those for the tennis match yet. So I'm probably going to wait until those cases are available because I don't want to carry one without a case. I think that's nuts.
Well,
do you have yours in a case?
Well, so Leander was saying he was case-free, and I was like, oh, that's such a great idea because it is beautiful. So I didn't get a case, but I put a screen protector on it, a glass screen protector. And
the second day
I had it, I dropped it, leaving a bar. And it cracked the front glass just on the screen protector.
Oh. Whoa. It cracked the screen protector or the screen of your phone?
The screen protector. Like
the
glass cover.
Gosh.
So I was like, all right, going right back to a case on this bad boy.
So if I were you, I'd get like the OtterBox Mega Tank edition, you know, the one that's like 3 inches thick and it has like reinforced carbide in it or something like that.
I mean, with the plus size model though, it's like so huge already, and then when you put a case on it, it makes it like twice as big. So
it's like trying to keep a MacBook Pro in your pocket.
Yeah.
So speaking of the size, I mean, how has that been working? Because you and I have similar pant fits. How's that working on the
I did forget, because I've had plus size models before, but I forgot how big of a pain it is like when jogging. you know, and trying
to literally
fit it in my shorty shorts and having it, you know, feeling that plus pinch right there.
Yeah, the plus pinch. And so are you able to get it in your pants, and how's that working? Any problems getting
it
in out of your pocket or anything like that?
I just put
it
in the back pocket. Yeah. Hopefully
I've been
won't
doing that with
it.
My plus or my 10. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I pretty much keep my 10 in my back pocket anyway. So, you know, maybe it won't matter. It's a gorgeous phone, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. So sexy.
I can't wait. I need
Tim
to go
Cook
back
did a
and
great read. Job on it.
Yeah, I heard that he and Johnny Ive, they went to like a cabin somewhere, and they just didn't leave until the design was ready for that phone. That's an exclusive. You can print that on Cult of Mac if you want, Leander.
Oh, really? Thanks. Great.
Yeah, I have 17 anonymous sources. I can't tell you any of their names, but they verified that's the way it happened. Yeah, they went up there with a box of Carlo De Rossi wine, and they just stayed in the cabin until the design was perfected.
Sounds plausible.
Yeah, they hewn it out of clay. Anyway, I'll give you the details after we finish recording, and you can go to print with that. Speaking of Tim Cook, so he did an interview on Vice. I think it's airing on HBO. It either aired last night or it's airing tonight. And they talked to Tim Cook about a bunch of different stuff, and two of the topics I thought were really interesting were his comments on booting Alex Jones, and then also, and let's start with this one, his comments on Siri. So we've talked about on the show before, I had a theory on why Siri was not quite as good as the Google AI, the Amazon AI. And my theory was, well, it's because Apple is not selling your data. They're not slurping at everyone's data. And so they don't have as much information and data to chew through and compare to one another to really make their AI intelligent. Well, that theory has been dashed to pieces by Tim Cook because he was asked about this very thing. They asked Tim about Apple's stance on privacy and if it's hurting Siri from becoming more competitive with the Amazon product. Oh, I can say Alexa. That's because, never mind, that's not my active word anymore. And Tim Cook pushed back saying, any company that says they need all your data to make their service better is telling you a bunch of bunk, y'all. And that was funny to me because I thought to myself, well, if that's not the problem, why is Siri so bad? Yeah, that kind of makes Apple look worse.
I know, you should have said,
right?
That's why.
Bingo,
you know?
Y'all. That's it. We don't take your data. That's why Siri's behind. Because if it's not that, then why is it that it's not competing with Google and with Amazon's products? Clearly, it just must be engineering.
Yeah, and I don't think Apple prioritizes it as much as Google and Amazon have prioritized their AI offerings. They're kind of way behind the curve on it, seems like.
Although I have to say, I use Siri on my 10 all the time. Oh. I'm constantly barking out orders. The camera in the 10 is so, or the microphone in the 10 is so good. I bark out orders across the room, and it understands me. As long as you're giving it specific actions, I think it works pretty well. And for controlling HomeKit, it does work pretty well. But when you're actually asking it to give you answers to questions, the Amazon ECHO, man, it gives me answers to stuff that Siri would never even begin to be able to give me answers for. I mean, things that you would think it would never know, it somehow knows answers to. And so that's the stuff that I want to see Apple beef up in Siri. But anyway, I thought that was really funny. I was like, dude, that answer actually makes you look worse. They need to hire me as as their PR guy, and I'll just stand there, and Tim can look to me for cues before answering.
Are you
going to
buy that ECHO microwave or anything like that?
The microwave?
Did you see that?
Yeah.
They came out with how many different devices?
Pointless.
Oh God, it was like
useless.
20 devices. It was insane.
There was a clock, a wall clock.
Yeah, wall clock, like a dashboard thing for your car. Like
they're packing it into everything. Now your car actually might be useful because you could ask for information, directions, that type of thing. But they're putting it in like the new Ecobee thermostat has Alexa built in. Why do you need to talk to your thermostat about I don't know, searches for things that you want information on. It doesn't make any sense.
I tried to get it to play some music the other day. It didn't work.
You wanted to play? Hey, Ecobee, turn the room to 72 degrees and play me The Doors. It's like, what?
Yeah, I know. It didn't work. And it doesn't even really work for setting the temperature either, which is kind of frustrating.
Oh my gosh.
What?
I could do a whole show on this. I hate my Ecobee, Leander.
I'm
going to
hate
boat?
It too. You know,
I hate mine.
Wow.
It's one of the worst gadgets I have ever used in the history of this show. In fact, I was thinking on an upcoming episode, we could talk about the gadgets that we hate the most.
Yeah, okay.
And I was thinking, this is going to be at the very top of my list. I could give you a whole litany of reasons
why
it's
terrible. Well,
I turned
mine off. It just has a mind of its own. You know, it turns on the heating's on all night, and it's up to like 84 degrees. And then when it's get up in the morning, when it's actually, you know, and I'm freezing, it won't turn on, or it won't work, or it comes, you know, it seems to be, it's always on. So I had to turn it off because it was actually costing us a fortune.
Yeah, it's on when you don't want it to be, and then it's off when you need it to be. It doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to go into a tangent here. Okay, let's move on to Tim Cook's comments about booting Alex Jones. So I was wondering what he was going to say about this. Like, what reason was it? What conclusion was it that made them want to kick off Alex Jones? And his answer, I thought, was interesting. And here's what he said. We think what the user wants is someone that does review these apps, someone that does review the podcasts, someone that, unlike Apple News, where a human is selecting the top stories, and that's what we do. We don't take a political stand. Can anyone tell me what that even means in regards to Alex Jones? I don't think it actually answers the question. Like, that was a Tim Cook dodge. Well, that was a jujitsu move. He took that question, he spun it down, and then he ran away.
Well, he said it was hate speech. That's why they removed
it.
Did
he say it was hate speech in the interview?
I think so. Yeah, I believe so.
Okay, I didn't catch that part. But what I thought was most interesting about this was he said that they are curating podcasts. That's news to me. I thought podcast was an open forum. I thought anyone could release a podcast and, you know, make it available in the podcast app and on the Apple Store in iTunes. For those that don't know how podcasts work, Apple doesn't actually host anything. You have your podcast hosted like you would host a website, and then it is pretty much a website, and your website creates a XML file, and then Apple pings your website every once in a while and slurps in that XML file. And then when you download the podcast, you're actually downloading it from the Coltcast server or from whatever podcast server is hosting the content that you're querying for. So Apple is basically just like a phone book. That's all they are. And so I thought it was interesting that they have somebody going through all the different podcasts. Really? How many podcasts are out there? Thousands, probably tens of thousands.
Right? I don't buy that because it's so much harder to review a podcast. Like, you would have to listen to, you know, consistently listen to all of the episode. It's not like an app where you can just scroll through it, see if everything's working within a few minutes, or if it's, you know, doing illegal things and then boot it. I think it's got to be way harder to, like, curate podcasts than anything.
And I personally don't want Apple curating podcasts. Like, I understand curating apps because people are paying for apps, but podcasts are free, and I don't want Apple selecting what content people even get to see. You're going to have somebody going in and based upon their own tastes, selecting what content is going to be available to how many billions of Apple devices are out there now, like one or two. And so that one or two people are going through, or that small team of people are going through and saying, hey, all these billions of people using these devices don't get to have access to this content because we don't find it to be palatable. I just think that's a bad move.
Can you flag a podcast, though?
Like, I don't think that you can. Only if it has, from my experience, you can only flag a podcast if it has content that is copyrighted in some way, or if it's using like your intellectual property in some way. But God, you know what I'd love to do in a future episode is talk about how Apple is squandering podcasts. One of the biggest media opportunities of our time is being absolutely squandered by Apple, and talk about what they could be doing to create this bright, vibrant podcast community. I mean, podcasts should be as popular, or maybe not as popular, maybe like two-thirds as popular as video. Think how popular YouTube is. That's what podcasts should be. And basically, creating a podcast right now is creating this beautiful gem. It's this beautiful piece of artwork, right? It's perfect and it's perfected. And then you just throw it into a black hole and you hope somebody finds it. That's what podcasts
well,
is like
some
right
ways,
now.
Well, there's a good debate. I mean, it would be an interesting conversation because it's, you know, some people think that Apple's neglect of podcast has actually been the best thing that happened to it.
Really?
Because, you know, like if you look what happened to the open web, you know, when advertisers wanted to get all these metrics and that led to them starting to track users, and that would be the worst thing for podcasts, because then you get all these metrics and, like, you know, how long did someone listen? Where did they listen to? Did they listen to the whole ad? And you know, once you start selling that kind of stuff, then it'll be just like the web, you know, it'll start spying on you, and it'll be the worst thing for it. I thought that was kind of, you know, like Marco Ament has made this argument a few times, and I was kind of convinced by it.
I don't think that you have to take it to that extreme, though. I mean, they could just make it easier to discover content that you like. I mean, think how bad discovery is in the podcast app.
Right.
Like, I constantly ask people, like, how did you find out about your favorite podcasts? And, like, in the Governor's Lounge, I've been having this discussion. We've been sitting there in our silk robes. Some of us have real pipes. Some of us have the ones with bubbles in it. It's a very eclectic bunch. And we're very comfortable because we're wearing fine Italian silk robes that Giuseppe has sewn and custom tailored for us. And I asked these people, how did you find out about the Cultcast? And people are all over the place. Like, some people found it on Cult-O-Mac. Some people found out about it from a friend. But a large majority of people found out about it just from Googling Mac podcast and finding it in the Apple store that way, or in the iTunes store that way. And I'm like, see, this is so chaotic. When you go on YouTube, you can literally be on YouTube all day long. You watch a video, and before that video is even open, it's suggesting other content to you. And so one video after another, it's constantly giving you content that it thinks you might like. And that is woefully missing from the podcast app and from the podcast ecosystem. No good way to discover content.
Well, do you think Siri should pop up at the end of the podcast and say, you know, we all heard you. You just listened to the end of the Cultcast. Maybe you should be listening to, Apple Chat.
Fireballcast.
Or more likely, this podcast about plumbing. And you're like, what? Yeah, right. I don't want to listen to a podcast about plumbing. The plumber's crack? I'm like, no. You listen to the Cultcast. Would you like to listen to the plumber's crack?
I know. It drives me crazy when you see Apple's podcast recommendations. And they are always, you know, these big media companies, you know, oh, look, NPR, Slate, you know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, all these big media companies that don't need really, I don't think, you know, any more promotion.
That's exactly right. The only way to have a top tier podcast on the iTunes store is to have a giant media company behind you or to be a celebrity. Look at all the top podcasts. They're all celebrities. Now, there is a what's hot section, and I will mention that we are frequently, generally always in it, in the what's hot in tech. And I would like to think that that's personally curated by Tim Cook himself, when he's like, make sure Cultcast in there, y'all, because you can discover your content that way. But other than that, yeah, it feels like YouTube is constantly surfacing obscure content that it thinks you might like and promoting that content. And Apple is constantly using celebrities to promote their platform. So rather than promoting the podcasts are promoting Apple. And so those are the people that Apple features, you know, on iTunes and in the podcast app. That's my whole point, is they're squandering it. They should be doing, there's a lot of things they should be doing that they're not doing. And it as advanced of a company as Apple is, it feels like podcast is being treated like a newspaper. It's just very low tech, and it could be much more like YouTube. Anyway, I didn't mean to go on about this long. Anyway, let's move on. Let me touch on this MoviePass story, because we got to wrap up with an all new under review. So let me just mention, I'm no longer a MoviePass member. I left, man. I'm off the train. I was done with that ride. They were constantly changing their terms of service, constantly changing their offer. One week you can see, you know, a movie every day. The next week you can only see movies on Tuesday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. And then the next week it's like, oh, actually you can't see any movies this week unless it's a movie that we've selected that we think you might be interested in. It was all over the place. So this is the best strategy, I think, to bring people back. MoviePass has been sending out an email to some previous customers, so people that have not opted into their new terms of service and let their memberships expire because they didn't want to continue with MoviePass's new offering. So MoviePass this week sent out an email that said this, because we really hope, quote, because we really hope you begin enjoying your MoviePass subscription again. We have chosen you, don't you feel special, to be part of a select test group who, beginning Friday, October 5th, will be restored to unlimited movies. So they're going to restore your account that was previously canceled. They go on to say, to be clear, unless you opt out, your unlimited subscription will be restored and you will begin enjoying unlimited movies again at $9.95 a month.
That's so shady.
Credit card on file will be charged on a monthly basis beginning October 5th, 2018. So in case you missed it, they are reinstating the memberships of people who had previously canceled unless those people click on a link in the email and specifically opt out of having their membership being restarted on their behalf.
I think they're going to have a lot of angry customers on in their email and on the phone pretty soon. I would be pissed off if they did that.
I know people are clearly going to be irate about this, but I love that MoviePass thinks this is a good idea. In fact, this is such a bizarre strategy that Business Insider reached out to them to ask them about it. And instead of apologizing and running away with the tail between their legs, as you would expect them to do, they actually doubled down on this strategy. And they said it's a terrific one-time promotional offer. If previous users are interested in returning to their original unlimited subscription, they can. If not, they simply need to click the link in the email and opt out. Oh. So this is a good thing, Buster.
I know they're hoping that so many people just like don't read their email, because I would, like, after so many MoviePass emails, you know, you get like subscribe to an email and you see all the company's emails and you're just like, oh gosh, you just delete it immediately. I'm sure they're gonna have like tens, hundreds of thousands of people that just don't even see that, so they're gonna make a quick $10 off of everybody. But everybody's going to be pissed off and cancel anyway. So right. Just seems like a bad idea all the way around.
It seems like a very bad idea. And I'll be checking my credit card to make sure that I'm not recharged. But it seems like this is only affecting people who let their memberships expire because they didn't want to accept the new terms of service. If you actually intentionally canceled your membership like I did, I don't think this actually will affect you. Mm. But still something to be... still something to be aware of. And I know I promoted MoviePass a lot, so there's probably a lot of people listening to this show who were members. It was a great gravy train, wasn't it? Hoo, baby. I loved it. I was sad. I was sad to see it go.
All it is, you just watched Jumanji 20 times.
Yeah, I only use it to watch Jumanji. But
did you actually go see any of the movies?
Oh, yeah. I saw a bunch of movies that I can't recall. I saw the weird one where the lady... has sex with the sea monster.
Oh, right. Unfortunately, I saw that too.
Unfortunately.
That was good.
Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water. Thank you. A whimsical movie. I saw Annihilation.
Oh, I like that.
And, man, I loved that movie.
Didn't like
I know
that,
Lewis hated it.
No, you and I are like total polar opposites when it comes to movies.
Yeah, you like rubbish movies and a lot of good ones.
I'm surprised that Leander liked that one. It doesn't have subtitles. It's not obscure. It doesn't feature some British actor no one's ever heard
people
of.
People hated it because it didn't explain what was going on. Especially the ending.
That's what I loved about it, though.
That's what I liked about it, too.
Yeah. Oh, man, I loved that. I loved that movie. Anyway, so there's your MoviePass update. Now, unless you think that they might be going out of business, you're like, surely this has to be the death rattle. No, they just announced another $65 million in new funding. So clearly someone thinks MoviePass is onto something. They've got a bright future ahead of them and gave them $65 million. You know, I make fun of MoviePass. I really do hope they survive. I like what they're trying to do, and I appreciate the risks that they're trying to take. They just do things in such an oddball way. I mean, and they change their terms so often, it's kind of hard not to make fun of them because they're totally insane. But I really do want them to succeed. And if they ever came up with a more compelling offer, I would consider going back to them. But they're not there yet. Okay, let's go ahead and wrap it on up with an all-new Under Review, the segment where we talk about the tech that we're currently testing out, what we like, what we don't. Does anyone want to go first, Leander?
Okay. All right.
Well, if I just leave it open, everyone just sits there quietly and awkwardly. I have to call on somebody.
Okay.
Just like high school.
Yeah, just get, what do you got, Leander? I know you probably got a whole office full of absolute treasures.
Well, I was going to talk about some iPhone cases because we've got hundreds of them, but I'm going to talk about something I was really excited about, which I just came, which I just got like 2 days ago that I had been waiting. It was a Kickstarter project which I backed, and
you actually got it.
And I actually got it. Yeah, it actually just showed up, and I think it's really fantastic.
2 years ago or something.
About I don't know, I can't remember. It was a few months. It was not, I don't want to say it was a year, but I would say it was like 8, 9, 10 months ago. And you know, but it's from a company that did a previous Kickstarter campaign and was very successful, and it's like a real company now. So anyway, it's the Ace light, bike light from C-Sense, which is a company out of Northern Ireland.
Oh yeah, you've talked about their light. You talked about their helmet before, didn't you?
That was Lumos. But
You also talked about a set of bike lights by C-Sense.
Well, this is their updated version by the same company. Yeah, so it's before they had their lights were called Icon, and these are the updated version. They're very similar. They have all this. They have sensors, light sensors, and accelerometers. So and they have a bunch of AI built into it. You don't need to turn them on or off. They flash brighter and harder when you slow down, when you're like at a junction, or if you go through a tunnel or go into some trees. So they're reactive to the environment, and they're really bright. And they're doing behind the scenes a bunch of data collection for the company, and they're actually using that. I met the guy that did it, and I had a really interesting time talking to him for about an hour or so, and he told me that was really what they were really interested in, was like getting all this data about road usage and road conditions. It's so sensitive; it can actually tell if you're riding over some soft asphalt that's going to turn into a pothole, which is insane.
Wow! What?
Yeah, apparently they can do that, and this is the data that they're selling to. Like they're working with the city of Dublin at the moment. I'm sorry, maybe it's Belfast. I beg your pardon, it's Belfast. So they're working with Belfast at the moment, and he said it's so sensitive they can actually sort of tell the road condition.
Good grief!
And they're hoping that the city will be more responsive to like potholes and things like that. You know, because
I'm sure they'll get right on that. Fill those right in.
I don't know what he's smoking, but this is what he was telling me. And you know, like as well as a bunch of other stuff, you know. But he said I was blown away by that. But as bike lights, they're fantastic. You know, they're really the best bike lights money can buy. And of course, they come with an app. You can change the pattern. You can, the strobe pattern. You can make them solid or flash. You can pair them. It'll show up on your bike computer so that you don't have to get your phone out if you want to make any changes. So you can just do it from the bike computer on your handlebars. They're not cheap, but they definitely are the best lights that I've ever seen.
They're not cheap. I was waiting for that. How much are they? $199?
No, actually cheaper than that. They're 80 quid, £80. Which is about $104.
Jeez.
Oh, and that's for both of them?
Yeah, for a pair of them, yeah. Oh.
That's not bad. For a couple of AI...
powered lights?
Bike lights? Yeah. I think that's a fair deal.
You think it's good? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how much bike lights, though.
Well, you can get cheaper bike lights. You can get a set of bike lights for much cheaper than that. But, you know, they don't come with all the smarts. And I know for a fact they make it safer because there's a tunnel... When I got riding in Marin, there's a tunnel I go through, and I forgot my lights the other day, and some moron, you know, nearly ran me over, like overtaking me inside the tunnel, did a really close pass. And when I had my lights on, you know, they don't, they stay behind. I've been like, weirdly, I think about this every time I go through the tunnel, like, you know, I've got my lights on, and I'm always terrified because it is kind of a scary tunnel. But when I have the lights on, the cars stay back. So I know that they're much more visible, and it does literally make you safer.
All right, the Ace bike lights by C-Sense. How do you spell C-Sense?
S-E-E-Sense, S-E-N-S-E. And the website is C-Sense, S-E-E-S-E-N-S-E. My God, it's like a tongue twister.
M-I-S-S-I-P-P. Okay. I'll include a link to this in the show notes because I'm sure no one who heard what you just said will remember how it's actually spelled. I'm not sure I do. I'm going to have to Google this after we're done recording the show. Okay, you know what? I'll go next. I've got a product here that I've had for months and months, and I'm such a naughty boy. I should have talked about this earlier. But I really wanted to give it a go, And this is the Logitech Craft keyboard. It works for Mac and PC. It's a Bluetooth keyboard with some very neat tricks. So first of all, I should say this is like an artisanal keyboard, you know, artisanal water, artisanal cocktails. It's their premium product, and it is a gorgeous looking keyboard. In fact, I think this might be the most beautiful keyboard that you can buy for your Mac. And it has an all metal design. It has a beautiful luminescent backlit keyboard. The clicks on the keys, ooh baby, they feel very good. Yeah, they're very nice, very clicky. But the feature that they always tout, the marquee feature, is it has a input dial at the top left of the keyboard. It's like the digital crown on the Apple Watch, and it allows you to access different functionality contextually within different apps. So within Photoshop, you could use it to select different tools. You can use it to increase and decrease the sizes of brushes, and there's all these kind of cool tricks built into a bunch of Adobe's different apps. It also works in Word. It also works in Excel and PowerPoint, and they're continually integrating new functionality into the keyboard to work with all these different apps. And it also will connect to up to 3 devices at once. So you can press a little button on it, it will connect to your Mac, press it again, it will connect to your PC. So you could have it connected to different computers, which is always really nice. That's one of my favorite things about my Logitech Master Mouse, which I've talked about on the show before, is you can press a little button on it and it will automatically connect to different devices. So you don't have to have a bunch of different keyboards and mice for your different computers. I mean, I have three computers in the Cult Command Center. Can you believe that? 3. And I want another one, actually. I wanted to get another PC that I can use for streaming.
What, to stack? Yeah, to the other stacking on them.
Exactly. You know, like when you go to a concert and they have all those speakers stacked up? That's what I want.
A stack of computers.
I want to have stacked computers in here ever. I want to have a throne built out of computers. I'm just going to sit in it in my Italian silk robe. Yeah. So it's a beautiful product. If you have your MacBook Pro in a dock and you want a external keyboard, if you're just looking for a premium keyboard for your Mac Pro or your Mac Pro, your iMac, or your PC, I would urge you to check it out. Again, it's called the Logitech Craft Keyboard, and I think it's $200, which might sound like a lot, but in the world of higher-end keyboards, it's actually not that unusual to see a keyboard that's $150, $200. Man, especially if you're looking at like gaming keyboards in the PC space, they have some insane keyboards that cost so much money. Before I started getting products from the keyboard space, I had no idea. There's so many different characteristics that you can customize, and of course, a lot of those add to the price of the keyboard. I mean, I just thought a keyboard was a keyboard, but boy, was I wrong. A premium keyboard, an artisanal keyboard, is a whole world different.
Is it really worth it for $200?
I think it depends on how you're going to use it. If you have multiple machines, if you are a designer, if you will take advantage of the creative input dial at the top left, then I think that it might be worth it. But just on quality alone, this thing, as soon as you take it out of the box, you can tell immediately it's made from premium materials. The keys feel great. It has a nice heft to it. If someone breaks into your office, you could probably hit them in the head with this and kill them. So it's a self-defense device. I mean, there's all sorts of different use cases I could go on and on about. So it's hard to answer the question, is it worth $200? Because everyone's sensitivity to price is different. I will say, though, that for the price, you get a very premium keyboard. And it's beautiful too. It looks like Johnny Ive designed it. So it's in the same aesthetic vein that you're used to. The same premium, high quality aesthetics that you would expect from an Apple device. Okay, who wants to go next? Let's let Buster go next, because he promised he's got a real hot one, Lewis. And I don't want you to have to wrap up after he's done promoting his, you know, rocket powered paraglider.
You mean you do want me to have to wrap up?
No, I don't want you to have to go after that. That wouldn't be fair for you.
I thought you said Buster's going.
Yeah, so I thought.
No, he's going last.
Oh my God, I feel a little bit dense today. Well, this is a little weird coincidence. What I was going to talk about is a Logitech keyboard.
Oh, nerds.
It's not the craft, is it?
No, it's not, actually. But it's also something I've had laying around for a while. And here's the reason why I'm going to talk about it. It's called the Logitech Keys to Go. Are you guys familiar with this?
No.
Keys to Go, no.
I got to say, when I got this, I was like, well, I don't know. It's whatever. It's a very small keyboard. It's maybe like the size of an iPad, 10-inch iPad Pro. It's a little bit smaller than that, right? But roughly the same size. Really thin, I don't know what it is. It's like a quarter inch deep, right? So I was like, what is this for? I don't get it. Well, then this summer when I'm like, oh, I got to, go on a long vacation and I'm not going to take my MacBook. I don't have any work to do. I'm just taking my iPad, but I know there's going to be times where I want to type something. I want to write more than a couple of words. And sometimes I find the key, the on-screen keyboard, right? It's annoying. So sometimes you just want to type a little bit. Well, this thing actually is great for that. The keys, it's not a premium thing like you're talking about. The keys are squishy. They're not as comfortable or precise as a full-size Bluetooth keyboard. But this thing is absolutely tiny. It weighs like a little bit over 6 ounces. And it's just perfect. You just set it right on top of your iPad. It just tucks right in, right with it. It's got little shortcut keys for iOS, so you can do things like search and switch between apps and stuff like that, control music and whatnot. It's just very convenient for travel. And so I use that with the, just a regular Apple Smart Cover, which is the thinnest, lightest thing I could find. And then I as a little bonus, I got this little other little thing I've never talked about. It's just a little case for an iPad Pro. They make it for all different kind of iPads, but it's made by Dodo Case. You familiar with that company?
Oh, yeah.
No.
They make nice cases.
They make those, those book-looking things, right? And I had one of them, and I liked the way that thing looked, but I didn't like using it at all. That's actually why I ended up with the Smart Cover, because, you can pop that Smart Cover off instantly. It's very unobtrusive. It works well. Like if you're on an airplane or something, you can fold it up and have your thing sit there like a little mini MacBook. So then when I started using the Keys to Go and my iPad, I'm like, oh my God, now I got these two things. Maybe I'll try that case now. And this thing is great. It's made out of waxed canvas. It's got a little leather, a hand place where you hold it, it's kind of wraps around a little leather hand grip area. It's got a little leather strap with a snap on it to hold it shut. It's kind of, it's soft and it's padded and it's really nice. It makes for a great little travel rig for your iPad. You just toss that in there, you toss it in your backpack, everything's good. That's all
that
I got.
That keyboard's really interesting. I'm looking at it right now. It's just like a little typing mat. It's like a mat. You just type, toss it in your bag, and then when you need a keyboard, you just pop it out.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, when I go on the road and I take my MacBook, I take another keyboard because I don't like using a MacBook keyboard. I don't like, it's uncomfortable to me. And so, but I don't want to carry a giant, keyboard with me. So this thing is like, I can't explain to you how portable it is. I mean, it's tiny. I mean, 6 ounces, yeah. It's it's really, it's like so light that it weighs less than a magazine does. Even a crappy magazine with no ads in it, no editorial anymore, like they all are these days. it's really tiny and it gets the job done. Again, not a, like a premium keyboard experience, it doesn't have cherry keys and all that, but, If you want something lightweight to carry with you, I recommend it.
All right. The Keys to Go keyboard, we'll, of course, link to that in the show notes. Buster.
Whoa. Hey.
Take us home.
All right. So
take us home in a big way.
I've got the new Boosted Mini X electric skateboard.
Oh, dude, of course you got one of those. Dude. Give me a freaking break.
Oh, man. It's so much fun.
The Boosted, you said it's the Mini?
The Mini X, yeah.
The Mini X. And what's did they used to have a Mini, just that one they just called the Mini?
They have like a Mini S, which doesn't have as big a battery, so it's like more, I think you can actually take that one on planes without getting they're taken away. The Mini X has like a bigger battery for extended range and better speed. And it's $1,000, but it's cheaper than the other boosted boards, which, you know, are can be like $1,400, $1,600. They're like stupid expensive. But this one's like one that I think most people could afford. And it's just way more portable. So it's shorter. It's like a regular size skateboard. I think that's like my favorite thing about it over the other board that I reviewed like last year from them. Because you can actually just hold it like a regular skateboard instead of like having this big, giant longboard that you're carrying around like a surfboard or something. But,
Oh man. It's actually, I'm looking at the picture though. It's like, it's not, they say it's mini, but it doesn't look like it's that small.
No,
it looks
not
like
super
a normal size skateboard.
Yeah, it's a normal size skateboard. It's mini compared to the other ones, which are longboards. But yeah, range on it's awesome, super fast, and it's just kind of like a great like short distance transport. Like on last Friday when I had to go pick up my new iPhone XS Max, my van was in the shop, and so I just grabbed the boosted board and rode that to the mall like 4 miles away.
Wow.
You know, feeling like a boss, just cruising through the neighborhoods. Oh man, it's like the funnest thing because you're, you know, it can go like 20 miles per hour. So you're going like as fast as a bicycle, like at top speed. So it's pretty sick. So like you're not like worried about being a hindrance to traffic. And then sometimes like I'm beating cars off the line at like stoplights and stuff. So it's super fun. Design is way better than the other boards, I think. I mean, it's not as flexible as the other boosted boards, which that was kind of my favorite part about them was the bamboo deck on them was really nice, and you could like
you could bounce up and down like in a trampoline.
Yeah, pretty much. Like it was really flexible. The other boards, this one's a lot more stiff, but it's got the it's got like the regular skateboard tail on the back, so you can still like maneuver around with it. But
pop a wheelie, run on two wheels, and do a quick
pop
turn.
A wheelie.
Yeah, I'm not trying any of that. I'm trying to stay safe and not crack my dome open. But
it does look fun. Yeah.
Oh, dude, it's super fun, and it can go uphill pretty well. Like I think I can't remember what the grade is, but I think it can go like 10% to 15% grades, no problem.
That's pretty steep. What did you say the range was?
14 miles on the mini. Jeez. On the X.
And are you finding that seems to be about what you get?
Yeah, pretty accurate as long as you're like using the it has like three different modes, like slower, faster, and hella fast. As long as you're on like the medium or slow mode, you get like way better range on it.
Oh yeah. And do you have like the elbow pads, the knee pads,
no,
and all that stuff?
Jeez.
Come on, you gotta stay safe.
That's not like a true skater, you know? Backwards cap and shorts and shoes, and that's all you need. Come on.
I do the Andre Agassi. I have the spandex shorts under the, like the real short shorts, like the running shorts.
80s style.
And then I have like the real thick elbow pads.
Uh-huh.
And then I have the hand ones that have like the thing on the palms, like in case I fall forward.
Nice.
And then I have like a helmet, you know, just in case. You gotta play it safe, man.
Yeah, true.
I mean, you don't want to fall over and break something, and you want to play it safe. And I mean, being safe is much more important than being cool.
I don't know. Being cool is pretty cool, though. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you're dead and I'm alive, I'll take your board and I'll
cool. Thanks.
I'll get to enjoy it for years longer.
Thanks for putting that on me.
Okay, the boosted Mini X battery powered board by the freaking jerk Buster who got the cool products.
Oh, it's a little
bit
sexier
than a
keyboard.
Why don't they ever send me electric skateboard?
Dude,
what the heck's going on?
I don't know. You got to try harder. I got next pick's going to be even better. Just
what?
Watch. Yeah.
Oh no.
An actual flamethrower.
Oh, from the Boring Company? That would be cool.
I would love to test one of those. Yeah. I saw some videos online. I wouldn't mind playing around with those. I love playing with fire too. I've always loved playing with fire. And I would use that in my yard for burning brush and for, you know, just lighting things on fire that probably shouldn't be on fire. Okay, well, I'll include links to all of this stuff in the show notes if you guys want to check out any of the products we talked about on today's show. If you want to reach out, many of the stories we talked about in today's show, we are all on Twitter. I'm at Airfun, Buster's BST3R, Lewis is at Lewis Wallace, Leander is at L. Caney. If you want to come join us for the discussion, for the silk robes, for the walk-in Stella Artois industrial fridge, join us in the cult club. I'll include a link in the show notes. Remember, The link's only going to be good for about 24 hours, so you got to act fast. Get in while you can. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcasts we have for you guys this week. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Do you guys know we've had to escort Alex E. Heath out of the cult club twice already?
Was he in it?
Trying to sneak in. No, he's not allowed. He's not allowed. He keeps trying to sneak in, and he really wants to be in it really badly, but you know, we're not going to let him in. He's a traitor, and he's not allowed in the cult club. Do you guys know we've had to escort Alex E. Heath out of the cult club twice already?
Was he in
trying to sneak in? No, he's not allowed in there. He's not allowed. He keeps trying to sneak in, and he really wants to be in it really badly, but you know, we're not going to let him in. He's a traitor, and he's not allowed in the cult club. Yeah, we caught him. We caught him scaling the fence on the north lawn during the badminton tournament, and of course, members spotted him right away, and he was pelted with shuttlecocks while the security was notified, and they escorted him off the premises.
Good. That'll live.
Yeah, he's covered in red welts. Let me tell you, there's nothing more gratifying than pelting Alex E. Heath with a shuttlecock at like 30 miles an hour.
Right, as he whelps and runs.
He tries to cover himself with his hands. Another time he tried to sneak in dressed as a waiter. We don't have any waiters there, so he was identified right away.
This program is brought to you by Stanford University. Please visit us at stanford.edu.
Thank you. I'm honored to be with you today for your commencement from one of the finest universities in the world. Truth be told, I never graduated from college, and this is the closest I've ever gotten to a college graduation. Today, I want to tell you three stories from my life. That's it. No big deal. Just three stories. The first story is about connecting the dots. I dropped out of Reed College after the first 6 months, but then stayed around as a drop-in for another 18 months or so before I really quit. So why'd I drop out? It started before I was born. My biological mother was a young, unwed graduate student, and she decided to put me up for adoption. She felt very strongly that I should be adopted by college graduates, so everything was all set for me to be adopted at birth by a lawyer and his wife. Except that when I popped out, they decided at the last minute that they really wanted a girl. So my parents, who were on a waiting list, got a call in the middle of the night asking, "We've got an unexpected baby boy. Do you want him?" They said, "Of course." My biological mother found out later that my mother had never graduated from college and that my father had never graduated from high school. She refused to sign the final adoption papers. She only relented a few months later when my parents promised that I would go to college. This was the start in my life. And 17 years later, I did go to college. But I naively chose a college that was almost as expensive as Stanford. And all of my working class parents' savings were being spent on my college tuition. After 6 months, I couldn't see the value in it. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life and no idea how college was going to help me figure it out. And here I was, spending all of the money my parents had saved their entire life. So I decided to drop out and trust that it would all work out okay. It was pretty scary at the time, but looking back, it was one of the best decisions I ever made. The minute I dropped out, I could stop taking the required classes that didn't interest me and begin dropping in on the ones that looked far more interesting. It wasn't all romantic. I didn't have a dorm room, so I slept on the floor in friends' rooms. I returned Coke bottles for the 5-cent deposits to buy food with. And I would walk the 7 miles across town every Sunday night to get one good meal a week at the Hare Krishna temple. I loved it. And much of what I stumbled into by following my curiosity and intuition turned out to be priceless later on. Let me give you one example. Reed College at that time offered perhaps the best calligraphy instruction in the country. Throughout the campus, every poster, every label on every drawer was beautifully hand calligraphed. Because I had dropped out and didn't have to take the normal classes, I decided to take a calligraphy class to learn how to do this. I learned about serif and sans serif typefaces, about varying the amount of space between different letter combinations, about what makes great typography great. It was beautiful, historical, artistically subtle in a way that science can't capture, and I found it fascinating. None of this had even a hope of any practical application in my life. But 10 years later, when we were designing the first Macintosh computer, it all came back to me. And we designed it all into the Mac. It was the first computer with beautiful typography. If I had never dropped in on that single course in college, the Mac would have never had multiple typefaces or proportionally spaced fonts. And since Windows just copied the Mac, it's likely that no personal computer would have them. If I had never dropped out, I would have never dropped in on that calligraphy class, and personal computers might not have the wonderful typography that they do. Of course, it was impossible to connect the dots looking forward when I was in college, but it was very, very clear looking backwards 10 years later. Again, you can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backwards. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future. You have to trust in something, your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever. Because believing that the dots will connect down the road will give you the confidence to follow your heart even when it leads you off the well-worn path, and that will make all the difference. My second story is about love and loss. I was lucky. I found what I loved to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce, and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next, and I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Laureen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life's gonna hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love. And that is as true for work as it is for your lovers. Your work is gonna fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking, don't settle. My third story is about death. When I was 17, I read a quote that went something like, "If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right." It made an impression on me, and since then, for the past 33 years, I've looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart. About a year ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a scan at 7:30 in the morning, and it clearly showed a tumor on my pancreas. I didn't even know what a pancreas was. The doctors told me this was almost certainly a type of cancer that is incurable, and that I should expect to live no longer than 3 to 6 months. My doctor advised me to go home and get my affairs in order, which is doctor's code for prepare to die. It means to try and tell your kids everything you thought you'd have the next 10 years to tell them in just a few months. It means to make sure everything is buttoned up so that it will be as easy as possible for your family. It means to say your goodbyes. I live with that diagnosis all day. Later that evening, I had a biopsy where they stuck an endoscope down my throat, through my stomach and into my intestines, put a needle into my pancreas and got a few cells from the tumor. I was sedated, but my wife, who was there, told me that when they viewed the cells under a microscope, the doctor started crying because it turned out to be a very rare form of pancreatic cancer that is curable with surgery. I had the surgery, and thankfully, I'm fine now. This was the closest I've been to facing death, and I hope it's the closest I get for a few more decades. Having lived through it, I can now say this to you with a bit more certainty than when death was a useful but purely intellectual concept. No one wants to die. Even people who want to go to heaven don't want to die to get there. And yet, death is the destination we all share. No one has ever escaped it. And that is as it should be, because death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent. It clears out the old to make way for the new. Right now, the new is you. But someday, not too long from now, you will gradually become the old and be cleared away. Sorry to be so dramatic, but it's quite true. Your time is limited, So don't waste it living someone else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary. When I was young, there was an amazing publication called the Whole Earth Catalog, which was one of the Bibles of my generation. It was created by a fellow named Stuart Brand, not far from here in Menlo Park, and he brought it to life with his poetic touch. This was in the late 60s, before personal computers and desktop publishing, so it was all made with typewriters, scissors, and Polaroid cameras. It was sort of like Google in paperback form, 35 years before Google came along. It was idealistic, overflowing with neat tools and great notions. Stuart and his team put out several issues of the Whole Earth Catalog, and then, when it had run its course, they put out a final issue. It was the mid-1970s, and I was your age. On the back cover of their final issue was a photograph of an early morning country road, the kind you might find yourself hitchhiking on if you were so adventurous. Beneath it were the words, "Stay hungry, stay foolish." It was their farewell message as they signed off. Stay hungry, stay foolish. And I have always wished that for myself. And now, as you graduate to begin anew, I wish that for you. Stay hungry, stay foolish. Thank you all very much.
The preceding program is copyrighted by Stanford University. Please visit us at stanford.edu.